Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric, with us my co-host Ray.
Hello.
And our co-host Jim.
Hey guys, how's it going?
We are doing well. We got a jam-packed show for you this week. We've got our first major GT of 2011 in the United States, and a lot of big names were there. And they definitely shook up the ITC Top 10. We'll talk about the new ITC Top 10 at the end of the show. We've got some new goodies from Games Workshop. We have a tease preview for next Saturday. And but most importantly, we got our first look inside Warzone Caradon Act 1. The Book of Rust.
Is that how you say it, Cardon? Because
I have no idea.
Isn't there a Space Marine chapter named the Cardons or something?
Yeah, they're the shark people, the space sharks.
Okay, so is this like a shark planet with sharknadoes?
I don't know. I don't know if it's an aquatic planet or what the heck is going on. It is spelled slightly differently, but I'm like, whatever.
But then the planet's called Metallica, which is also ridiculous.
Yes, there's a Forge World Metallica, which I have many puns to share with you later when we get to that. So.
Okay, great. I can't wait. Like Games Workshop's their naming scheme, like everything has to either have war in it or be like a literal, like completely literal. It's a metal forge world, so we're gonna call it Metallica.
Yep. Yeah. So anyway, so the contents of this wonderful book, first of all, it was always confusing. What is this thing? Is this going to be a competitive play thing? Is this a crusade thing? But interesting, they did tease a new crusade book today, by the way. That was interesting as well. But it is actually kind of a vigilist for the 9th edition. It's kind of a little bit of everything in there. So there are 41 pages of lore, which sounds interesting. There are campaign battles. So if you want to play sort of a historical reenactment of a fictional world, you're all over that, which is similar with the head in Vigilus. There are close to 6 to 7 pages of specific crusade rules, such as relics and battle traits and weapon enhancements and all kinds of fun stuff like that. And especially for Death Guard, they can create their own plagues, which is, I guess, fun.
And then this is Crusade, right?
This is for Crusade. Yeah, so all those.
I was like, oh, that sounds actually something cool for match.
And then for match play, there are these army rules. And at first, they look pretty small. And so they sound like they are like sub-factions or whatever. What's the sub of a sub-faction? I'm not really sure. So, for example, there are armies of renown. So this is a specific small area, and so the first one we have is Mechanicus Defense Cohort. It's a whopping 2 pages, so I'm not losing a lot of sleep over what could that be. There's Codex Supplement Metallica. So just when you think, wow, Dark Angel's got a big boost, does this mean every Forge World's going to get this huge layout? No, it's only 4 pages. So Orion probably takes longer to listen to than to read these 4 pages. So good luck with that. But I'm sure it gives you all the rules you need for James Kirk and Lars, and maybe even a little Cliff and a couple other fun friends, maybe Ron and Dave too, who knows. The next army, yeah, Metallica fans will know.
Okay, I like Metallica, but that was way over my head.
Army for now, next one is called a Freelance Blade, which is rumored to be a way to take an entire detachment of freelancers.
Great. Knights are
free blades.
Yes, free blades. What did I say? Freelance?
Uh-huh.
The free blade lance. Sorry.
They're freelance free blades, though. Like they'll work
right.
For free.
If you need any artwork done, they'll help you. So on the side. There's a Codex Supplement for House Raven. I read that as Raven Guard the first time. I got all excited and realized, nope, it is specifically for that knight house. Once again, looks like about 4 pages. So I'm not sure what we're going to get there. Last but not least, there's the Terminus S Assault Force. And that's... Yeah, a little Death Guard there.
Terminus S is the flagship of the first company of Death Guard, led by Typhus, for those of you that don't. And it fought in the Horus Heresy.
Yes, it did. And there's a supposedly floating around in White Dwarf. There used to be a really cool conversion of it for Battlefleet Gothic, but it was not actually commercially available, which was sad. And then they also have something called a Fester Discipline on page 80, which I'm curious what that's about, because it goes on for 4 pages. So I'm not sure what that's going to be.
I can't imagine if it's 4 pages, it's a psychic discipline, although that's what it makes it sound like.
Here's
it does,
the thing.
Yes, I'm not sure what that's.
I think in this case, at least two of those pages, it's probably actually like a 2-page like picture that you get every once in a while in books.
Oh God, please don't.
And it's probably going to be like a like a, you know, Typhus and his Death Guard against like whatever else.
A spread? You mean a 2-page spread in the middle?
Yeah, Typhus is the centerfold. So,
God, he's a centerfold model now.
That's right.
Yes, in all the worst ways.
Not what I'd want to be open. Looking at.
Nope. I was looking more. The thing that should not be has emerged. Anyway, Codex Supplement Cult of Strife for all you Drakari players is the last little bit. Another 4 pages on Lilith Hesperix's private witch cult. So be interested to see what they have in there. So being that it's pretty short, I'm assuming it's going to be kind of like the Plague Companies and the Thousand Sun cults. Probably one warlord trait, one stratagem, one relic is what I'm thinking. I can't imagine being anything more than that.
There could be three. There could be as many as three of those.
So the official word on this is, have you ever wanted to fill the entire Knight Lance of Freeblades or a region of Cult Mechanicus Unfeeling Automons? New rules for Armies of Renown allow you to create a themed force based on several key players of the Carmadon campaign, each with its own benefits and restrictions. This offers a whole new way to build flavorful armies and score yourself extra relics, warlord traits, and stratagems.
Okay, so it sounds like it's going to suck. When I hear flavorful, that's it for me. I tuned out.
And you're in the restaurant business. That's hilarious.
I want flavorful in my food, not in my 40k armies. All right.
All right, there we go. In addition to those rules, you will find no less than 3 Codex supplements for Forge World, Metallica, House Raven, and Cult of Strife. Sounds like an early 80s tour, but anyway, giving up the expanded and updated options that can be used with your regular codices. So, interesting.
I'm really sad, like, we didn't get a Death Guard.
Well, like, whatever this festering discipline is, and you've got the Terminus S Assault Force, so curious what all that's about.
I'm really curious if there's going to be restrictions on using these in match play, or if these are going to be, like, only if you're playing, because I know the Vigilus campaigns, Vigilus scenarios, or sorry, detachments are obviously not permitted, so I'm really curious to see what if there are match play. Like, sorry, not match play, but I mean grand tournament, because you can play Vigilus in match play, you just can't play them in the grand tournament missions. So I'm curious if there's that restriction like that.
I'm willing to bet that these are probably designed to be manageable in match play in actual tournaments. I don't think when they did all the Vigilus stuff that they had necessarily intended it to be for tournaments. Which is why they eventually said no.
But like, yeah, okay, never mind. That's a whole rant. If that was what their intention is, then they're literally the dumbest company I've ever heard of.
I mean, in this case, that's why we're seeing the push of the Crusade stuff. It's like, okay, this is the stuff that's actually meant for the narrative, whereas in the past, there wasn't anything. When it came to rules, it was just rules. There was nothing to say, these rules are meant for narrative. So they could be, in the past, they could be taken as, you know, these are rules for anything.
Well, I will wait for the YouTube streamers to review the book.
Yes.
Before I pre-order, because it sounds like this could be a dud, but I'll reserve judgment.
Yeah, I'm kind of trying to be optimistic. I've already been pretty jaded by the lack of previews this week alone, so I'm just going to keep my negativity to a minimum. But other previews you can expect this coming Saturday, so by the time we start recording again, this will be available. Good, Eric. Piety and Pain. It's actually Pi Day today as we're recording, so maybe it's on my mind at this point. So that's the Sisters of Battle with Drakari models, when the only way to currently get the new HQ choices for both armies. The new Drakari Codex will be on pre-order next Saturday, as well as the new Combat Patrol, which is actually a pretty versatile box. It's pretty cool looking.
It's a legal force, which is cool. Must be nice.
Yeah, it's not. Well, we don't know that for sure, to be honest with you.
What do you mean? Sure. Why wouldn't it be?
Well, because the Death Guard one is illegal. You can't actually make a legal army with the
right, Codex. But you can clearly look at this that it is, because you've got 10 Kabbalite Warriors. You've got the Archon, you've got 5 Incubi, and then you've got 2 Transport.
One. Are those Ravager?
Okay, so those are heavies.
It's 1 Ravager, 1 Raider.
Okay.
Yeah, 1 Ravager, 1 Raider. I thought they were witches in the box, and I see the box art, and I'm like, nope, I was wrong. So I thought they had an Archon, Incubi, and witches. So I was like, yeah, it's legal. Yep, it's a legal Cabal, at least for now. Also, new cards. I didn't know they were still making cards for stratagems. I didn't realize that was still a thing.
No, oh, I love those things. I always buy those. Like the data cards?
Yeah, I didn't know they had those.
Oh, yeah, man. It was awesome. I for my death guard, especially because I'm a noob, I literally have them all in front of me when I'm playing.
Yeah, it's the
I thought I was the only one who used them.
No, and they're good for psychic spells, like putting them down next
to you. Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Surprising that your Chikari dice are coming out. This hasn't happened, like, I don't think ever. So I'm very excited about this. I don't
know. And they're usable. They're like 2 for 2, like this between these dice and the Slaanesh dice for AOS. GW finally produced 2 sets of like dice that like are actually usable, that don't have like weird symbols on every side where it takes like you need like a cryptograph to read. So good on them.
And they're made out of like some gummy material that rolls funny.
Yeah.
The aforementioned Cardadon Sector Book 1, Book of Rust, will also be up for pre-order. And then last but not least, I mentioned to briefly for you Crusade fans, Mission Pack Plague Purge. So this is designed to work with the rules in the Book of Rust. This expansion includes 24 Crusade missions, 6 for each game size, along with rules for playing Plague Purge Crusades and a suite of agendas, requisitions, and stratagems. So there you go. And then the more fun for all the other games. So there's still quite a bit to... So GW must have like found a nook in the factory to get things started. Because they got everything from Blood Bowl to Dire Chasm to Middle Earth. I didn't know they were still making Middle Earth models. So,
well, to be fair, they haven't released anything. Like I think the slowdown has really helped them kind of get caught up.
There we go. So lots of coming out next Saturday. So look forward to that. Also, a little preview thing. One of those we get up in the middle crack of dawn and watch Eddie and Adam tell us about all kinds of great new models. It looks like we'll finally get to look at that Adeptus Mechanicus model that was teased way back when we first saw Lilith and back when the Indominus box came out.
It's been a while.
Yeah. So I'm curious to find out what that finally is. I'm assuming the other two models that they're teasing in silhouette are AOS models because, well, unless there's a 40k character running around with a bow and arrow.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
So as we teased at the start of the show, a major tournament over the weekend, a good friend of the show, Colin McDade, it's Clutch City GT. He was able to get close to 80 players to come to Katy, Texas for the event. And so it was a who's who of top players and probably one of the biggest events we've seen so far in 2021. So hope everyone was safe. And
yeah, I saw some stream. There was some live stream going and everyone was wearing masks. So kudos to the organizers.
Yep. I saw some wider shots, plenty of room between the tables. So that looked really good. I did like on the stream, one of the things they did was they told you turn and phase. So like it'll be like Harlequin's turn 2, fight phase, charge phase. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
I must have been on a different stream because mine didn't do that.
No. They kind of blurped it up every now and then. So it was pretty cool. Anyway, your top 5 is something looks like this. Jack Harpster coming in 5th place from the Art of War team. 4th place, Dick Donavani from Art of War with Death Guard. 3rd place, John Camacho. That's a local Texan. With Imperium. 2nd place, Clifton Russell, also from Team Texas, with Orcs. And your winner from Team Battle Brothers, featuring another wonky Eldari list, Sean Naden, going a perfect 6-0.
It is very, like, first of all, congrats to Sean. There was a thread on Comp 40K where I called he would win. This is 2 weeks ago. So I just want to say, I didn't say it was going to happen, except I did. Second of all, it is very Sean Naden-like. Because he has 40k Jesus, to emerge, essentially come resurrect himself from his 40k like purgatory with an Eldar list that is apparently bottom tier, F tier, or block plus, or whatever that scheme everyone is using to like liberate the list, and in Yanari at that. So it's to go through guys like Frankie, Nick, and Junior, who are all very top good players. That is like, for me, like textbook Sean Naden. just once again proving why he's probably one of the goats when it comes to competitive 40k.
What's interesting is this list is the same one he ran 2 weeks ago, so people had a chance to practice against it. So I was like, oh my gosh.
But I think that's the thing. Like, I think people look at the list, and I actually saw his game against Junior, and I watched I watched his game against Junior, and like, people just don't even know what half that stuff does because it's like just not there, and like and how to play against it in ninth, right? So people are not practiced, and don't let me take anything away from Sean. Like, he managed to spot these lists that I think most people would just scratch their heads at. So, but I think another thing that does give him some advantage is that people just, no one's practicing against Eldar, Unari mix. Everyone's playing against Death Guard. They're playing against Marines. They're playing against Sisters, Harleys. Those are the lists that, because they've been told are good, those are the lists that you're playing against and practicing against and map building lists to fight. So when you show up with this kind of super jank Eldar list with all these different, like, all these different ways to, like, basically be janky, people just are not prepared for it, and they don't even really know what it does, right? And I think that's a huge advantage, and good on Sean Naden for recognizing that. So
yep. No, I'm not gonna, the first contact wins. I used to joke about that back in third edition. I played Necrons and it's like the old battle ones, and I'd show with my white dwarf because I didn't have a codex yet, and people are like, what the hell are those? I guess I'll throw a frag grenade at them. And I'm like, you know, making all the wrong choices because they just didn't know what the heck they were playing against. Same thing here. There's a couple units, even if you're a diehard of these factions, you're like, you took what now? So mm-hmm. So with no further ado, let's take a look at the list. He starts off with a spearhead detachment of Craftworld Eldar. I took a custom craft world featuring expert crafters and masters of concealment. And so he's already going to take the 3 CP penalty for this. Avatar of Kane and a Farseer Skyrunner with Doom and Executioner. He's got 3 units of 3 Dark Reapers, and all the Exarchs are using Rapid Shot. And then he fills out the attachment out with 2 Wraith Seers with Protect Jinx, and are armed with the Doom D-Cannon.
And I believe the D-Cannon's no line of sight, correct?
Correct.
So he's got a lot of no line of sight shooting, which in 9th edition is...
And with Protect and Jinx, he's able to buff units and or take away an arm. I mean, it's plus or minus all saves. It's armor and invulnerable saves. Mm-hmm. So, and he's got some redundancy and with those units, so it's pretty cool. And I believe, I don't think you used it, but if you kill something, no, it's only in the psychic phase. Never mind. That's there's a stratagem where the Yanari casters can get +2 to cast. But anyway, then in the patrol detachment, he adds on to that. He used Inari at this point, correct? No, he changed it. Yes, it is an Inari. And he is marching on with an Archon with the Hungering Blade, which is the Walker of Many Paths. So he's regenerating CP and getting mortal wounds on a 6+ to wound. He's got a Vrain. He's got a unit of 5 witches. He's got a Beastmaster with 3 units of Razorwing Flux. He's got 8 Incubi, a union of 15 Hellions, which has got everybody scratching their heads. A Ravager, all with Disintegrator Cannons. A Raider. And a Court of the Archon featuring 2 Urghuls who are great for action monkeys. So I was, since the last time we reviewed this list, I was kind of dissecting it. The Reapers are great at killing Marines. The Wraith Seers are actually more bait. You know, they get up front, they stand on the objectives up front and they say, come on, charge me. What else you got? And the Incubi, pretty good blenders, especially when you've got an Archon nearby. And because then they give
reroll. Too.
Yep. So he gets reroll ones to hit, and then the Inari have the stratagem to reroll wounds.
And always strike first. They just naturally strike first if stuff gets killed.
I still, for life, we cannot figure out what the Hellions are doing. But
I think they're like a deep strike threat that, you know, a lot of board presence, fast, a lot of damage.
So I will be anxiously looking the internet to see if I can find some live stream or some recorded streaming of those games. So
yeah, definitely watch his game against Junior because it's streamed and it's pretty good quality. So cool. You can kind of hear him talk through it. And yeah, Junior, who's like an excellent player from out of California, like GT winner. He plays on Team Zero Comp with the FLG guys, and that's obviously Jeff Robinson's old team. So he's a very good player. And Sean got 107 versus him. He won 100-7. Sorry, 100-17. So like just trounced.
Wow.
And this was in game 5, so this is like, they're both 4-0 at that point. This is not like a Like, this is like almost, this is basically the top table at that point. So, and he just like put a total clinic on like how to, how to like destroy Marines. It was very fun to watch, to be honest. So congrats to him.
Coming in second place, Clifton Russell with Orcs. This interesting list here as well, starting with the Battalion. He is a specialist mob of Garrot mobs, and it features a big mech with custom force field, war boss on bike, 2 units of 20 Gretchen, 1 unit of 10 Gretchen, 1 unit of 5 commandos, and 3 units of 3 big shooters with 2 custom mega blasters. And then in the heavy support slot, he's got 3 units of 6 smasher guns. Then he takes a patrol detachment of baboons, featuring a weird boy, a unit of 27 grots. 27. I guess he was running out of points somewhere. And a unit of 10 ludus. So this is definitely one of those lists I'm like, I figured it out. Oh, crap, it's turn 4.
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing I will say, and I don't know if this is a correct analysis, but so I'm just going to take a, as usual, I'm just going to give you guys my, like, unscientific, unresearched, like, opinion, which may or may not be true. But I have to channel a little bit of my inner Don Huzin on this too, who often has like kind of hot takes on meta stuff, but like that never actually seem to like come true, or you know, seems to claim that many things are good when they're in fact like they are in fact good or in fact bad. So like I feel like he's just as wrong as he is right. But I have a feeling that, you know, we've, as a kind of competitive community, we've been watching a very small group of players, so like namely the Art of War guys, a few other groups of players, play 9th edition for the last 6-7 months since it's been out, because no one else has really had access to gaming, not here, not really north in Europe. And I think there's a sense that in my head that the meta, as we of what the competitive community might think the meta is probably a lot different what the real meta is, because a lot of people have drank this Kool-Aid of like what's good. And the reason we think it's good is because someone from X podcast or X pundit told us, but like in the real world, armies like Orcs and Eldar are actually still really good. And like the reason we're not hearing that is because no one's playing those lists, right? In the very small amount of people that are actually playing, there aren't actually good Eldar players or good Orc players. So now that events are starting to happen, we're kind of seeing the emergence of like the true meta. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't know if that's crazy, but
no, I think you're right. It has been a very small sample size, and think about it. Even today, we're only talking about 1 GT. On an average episode, we're talking about 5. You know, that's right. Yeah, this is probably one that would have, you know, with this many players, actually, would this many guys have shown up to this event if it's been a normal year? So then you go look at, okay, what are people working on? There's, we know, for example, from the Focus Fire podcast, there's 4 or 5 guys that are literally having backyard tournaments that are, and there's not one of them is playing a meta list. So what are they working on? And what happens when they do show up at an Adepticon or a whatever stage?
Right.
Yeah, who knows? Right. I think it's exciting.
Yeah, and I think there's just some, I mean, don't get me wrong, Sean Naden is probably one of the best players in the world. He's gone to the top 8 at LVO 8, I think, every time he's attended, out of 8 times. So to say the least, he's probably one of the best players, if not, like, I never want to say the best player, because that's very hard to gauge, but I would say he's in the top 5 best players in the world, hands down. And, you know, this is a guy that hasn't played really any events this year, who's been, you know, raising a kid and mostly been just like podcasting and kind of playing one or two other people in his like local community. So to see him to kind of emerge out of that and to like take a tournament, it's like good on your brother.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. So, but I think it does say a lot about what is, you know, what is the reality and what's out there. And it's gonna be fun to watch as we keep moving forward. In third place was John Camacho with Imperium. So let's take a look at what he's got here. Starts with a Vanguard detachment of Custodes. Shadowkeepers, to be exact. He's got a shield captain in Alaris Tournament armor, which is easy for me to say. 3 Achilles Dreadnoughts, and 2 Contemptor Galactus Dreadnoughts. I'm not familiar with that one. And then a Vexus Praetor in Alaris Tournament armor. In the heavy support slot, he's got 2 Telamon heavy dreadnoughts, Then he starts off a patrol of Astra Militarum, and they are starts off with an assassin. Sorry about this, guys. Tempestus Prime went to three units of five Scions, all with hotshot las guns, and then a Tempestus command squad with four Meltaguns. Interesting. Correct me if I'm wrong. The Scions, all of them have like deep strike abilities, right? They can all be grav.
Yeah, inserted. That's right. If he has a Valkyrie, they can like drop from Valkyrie.
He doesn't have the Valkyrie. That's why I was like, I think they can still deep strike.
Yeah, so they have parachutes basically. They're the most low tech of all deep striking tech. Everyone's got like esoteric teleporters coming through the webway, like transdimensional teleportation, and then the guard have guys with parachutes. It's awesome.
I never understood the fascination with guard anyway, just the whole who could you be, you know, the psychic grav platform Eldar, the demonic legions, or you know, genetically enhanced super soldiers in power armor. I'll take the guys from Stalingrad. They look cool, you know.
I think they're there for all the like crotchety historical guys that want to play with their friends still but want to paint their army as like Soviet era, like 1940 Soviets or whatever, that they've been playing like Flames of War or historicals for too long. So it's to give them something to chew on, you know.
I guess not really sure. Anyway, not my cup of tea, but hey, more power to you. It is still one of my most difficult armies to beat, so I have all the respect for those players, but I don't get it. It's just to me, it's like going to Baskin Robbins. 31 flavors. What would you like? Two scoops of vanilla, please. Anyway, Nick D'Adavati. Perhaps you're getting coaching from him. What did he bring to the game? He brought a Death Guard list. The Exonerable Battalion, featuring a Demon Prince, Blinglet Playcaster, five Plague Marines, all with bolters, two units of 20 Poxwalkers, one unit of 10 Poxwalkers, three Death Shrouds, seven Blight Lords, one Putrefier, Taliban, and two Contemptors with Volkites and a Spawn. He then adds a Mortarian's Anvil Patrol, featuring a Demon Prince, three Death Shroud Terminators, 10 Poxwalkers, and a Foul Blight Spawn.
Yeah, it's pretty standard list. I like it, but it doesn't get big points, and so I feel like that's one of the issues.
And actually, taking a look at what Nick got for points, mostly in the 80s there, 90, 84, 87, 90, 75, and then he lost his last game to Sean Naden in the final round.
And it was a high-scoring game. So yeah, it was. Sean got 95 to 82. That's a massively high-scoring game.
Right. Yeah, no goalies in that game. So, and then last but not least, Jack Harpster with Black Templar. That's right, folks. The Black Templar. If you had to tell me that the only Marine list to make the top five in a GT was Black Templar, I'd say you're nuts. But then I look at this list and I go, I want to try this. So he starts up a battalion with High Marshal Helbrecht, our Primaris Lieutenant Reaver Armor, Primaris Chaplain on Bike, three Servitors, three units of five Crusaders, two units of five Blade Guard, one unit of six Blade Guard, Primaris Apothecary, 10 Vanguard Veterans with Storm Shields and Lightning Claws and Jump Packs, and then two Company Veterans, with one with the Storm Shield, and a unit of six Eradicators. And then he takes an auxiliary detachment to add Chaplain Grimaldus.
Cool. I have no idea what he does, but it sounds cool.
Yeah, that's one of those. I'm like, what does he do again? I don't remember. But the whole mass amounts of Blade Guard veterans, it just sounds really fun to play. Just, I stand here and knock me off this rock. Yeah, this is...
I think to your Black Templar's comment, I think if you had, after looking at these like this tournament at the start, if you had told anyone that it would be Eldar, Orcs, and Black Templars in the top like five, I think they'd have laughed at you.
Well, they laughed at me anyway, but that's okay. So as I mentioned, many multiple names here of renown throughout the 40K community were at this particular event, rounding out the field that did not make the top five. Judir Flahi, as we mentioned before, coming in eighth place, going 5-1, despite his absolute trouncing, as we talked about earlier, by Sean Naden. 10th place, lost myself, Ryan Snyder. Who's Ryan Snyder? We'll get to that later in the show.
Oops.
Mark Perry, also of Art of War fame, coming in 15th. Michael DeHales coming in 17th with Harlequins. DJ Jenkins with Blood Angels coming in 19th. We mentioned Sean being the greatest of all time, but the guy who currently has the title, Frankie Giampapa with Harlequins, also Team Zero Cop, coming in 26th.
Reese has been working him too hard. He's lost his touch.
That's what I've been hearing. They've been working on. He has not been able to get to as many events. I kind of look at him more like Babe Ruth. You know, they talk about like how many years he lost because he served in the military.
Mm-hmm. I have a, it's probably not appropriate, but it's not even that it's appropriate. It's probably not related, but I have a frontline gaming horror story from my experience recently with them. So, not really a horror story, but just like a funny story that involves like them not really understanding which country Vancouver, BC, British Columbia is. And thinking it's in Alaska.
Well, you do live in an igloo, right?
Yeah. So,
it's funny. I remember you said that a couple of weeks ago, and this is like, I think people think Ray and I live like in Tatooine, you know, when we say we live in Phoenix. So.
No, you don't?
No. Well, I did have to go up to Tashi Station to get some power converters before the show, but I got here just in time. So, trying to get my Star Wars credit back after Order 69 from last episode.
Yeah. Hey, man. at least it was an honest mistake. And I'm sure there's a Star Wars movie out there somewhere where an Order 69 doesn't exist, so you're probably not wrong. It's just not the kind of Star Wars movie to your kids.
That's right. Speaking of stories you don't want to share with your kids, Anthony Hernandez is your wooden spoon, going a perfect 0-6. Credit to him. Managed to come in 78th place. And interesting enough, he's also playing Death Guard.
Just goes to show it's the pilot, not the plane.
Not the plane. So there you go. So that is your first major GT of 2021 of 9th edition. I think you hit it on the head. So best laid plans, work until you get smacked in the face. And some players brought some unique lists and made the most out of it.
Yeah, and here's my hot tip for you. If you guys, if you know Sean Nadine's going to a tournament, make sure you practice against his list, because if you think you're going to win, you're going to definitely go through it.
Other events over the weekend, again, another edition of big names and small tournaments. At the Northern Front Spring Open up in Winnipeg, Canada, Alex McDougall notches another win. And then over in Sacramento, California, at the 40K RTT, one of the most original names we've seen this weekend, Michael Timpe of Necron fame managed to come in fourth. So those are your top tournament results from the weekend.
That's awesome. Michael's a great guy. So is Alex. Fellow good Canadian kid. So props to both of them.
So there we go. Interesting to see how the season progresses, because with the GT, I'm going to give you an idea. Right now, if you're going to a small RTT, like you're kind of in your backyard with eight players, the top players only get like 150 points. 150 points in terms of ITC points for the season is less. Yeah, basically, even Mark Perry got 159 points for coming in 15th. So a lot of these guys who were able to come to these, you know, safely compete in larger events, they're going to have a huge impact on the overall standings.
Yeah, I'm. Can't say I'm not extremely jealous, but hey, that's okay. You know, I gotta leave some of the winning to some of the other guys anyway, so it's
fine. We appreciate that.
Don't wanna. Not all the top players are there.
That's right. No, I was torn on it too. I was like, I'm really cool to talk about it, but man, I am jealous that I cannot get to these events, and but I can't say I am quite ready to make that kind of splash yet. I still need some practice games. So
I've been playing lots of TTS. That's all I got really sure for myself.
Yeah, I got a game in live last week, and oh my god, I don't know what the hell is wrong with me. It was terrible.
I've been trying to paint my TTS army in real life, so like every time I change my list, I paint a unit like so that I can essentially play my TTS army in real life. And that currently involves painting another 30 Poxwalkers, which are awful. So I'm not really happy with myself for including those in my TTS list.
Nice. I actually put together 15 of the new Incubi, you know, the plastic ones. And they have they start off great. And then the torsos and this, I don't know who designs these models. You know, if you chop this model at the knee on one leg, it'll fit on the sprue better. Anyway, they look great, but it has the infamous the triangle of doom, where you know two armpits and then the hands meet at the weapon. Mm-hmm. So if you don't glue it just right, they kind of flop all over the place. That drove me nuts. Mm. But the claves are all attached and ready to go, and I have a whole bunch of extra Inari heads, so I'll use for another project. I'm very excited.
Nice. I just put together two Contemptors, and I finally got all my Death Shroud together, so I now have 14 Death Shroud on my paint desk.
Oh my. Ooh, I need more Incubi.
Definitely. No one wants to play that.
So we should get some more previews this coming week for Hotness. Interesting enough, the other news that we didn't really talk about, it's not related to competitive, but back to a topic we talked about earlier, is getting Warhammer 40K's IP out there, but some new animation is coming our way.
Yeah. Did I talk about it last show about my suspicions? Because you know me, I always have suspicions.
Probably share again, because we got some news since last week about that.
I guess the first thing I'd ask is, like, what do you guys think about this move as far as JW is concerned? Like, do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing? What is the news?
So, well, first of all, the first news is they're coming out with a show, you know, another animation. They, rather than sending a cease and desist to the guys who did Astartes, hey, you want to work for us? That's awesome. You know, that makes a lot more sense. It looks really good as a CGI guy. I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of some really cool stuff there. I was a little confused. Why is it called the Exodite when there are no...
Oh, this is the Talon.
Yeah. And I'm like, why are there no Eldar riding dinosaurs? And
yeah, very
be
nice.
Patient. I'm like, okay, I'm very bad at that. But there's this little line there at the end of the press release that I go, burr. So, you know, it'll be coming out soon. Make sure your Warhammer account is up to date. So Ray's prophecy is coming true. Are all these going to be stuck behind a dumb paywall?
I guarantee it. In fact, I read another article that they had hired a big executive from, I can't remember where, but basically they've trademarked Warhammer Entertainment as a division. So they've started a Warhammer Entertainment division, and from what it sounds like, they're going to be doing like a streaming platform of some kind, from what I understand. So it'll be like Warhammer Plus TV, like Disney right. Plus. So I think it's an awful idea.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Enough of these platforms. I mean, just this weekend, same thing. CBS All Access had to be rebranded to Paramount Plus. And for that very reason, even though they have all this content and a brand new Star Trek show, they couldn't get it off the ground. So they're starting over. That's a major network. Now you got a game company that barely understood social networking 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's going to get into the streaming business. I mean, I'm sorry, guys. Sign a deal with Netflix or even do an Amazon deal. That way you can get more Amazon distribution for your product. Make it happen. I'm frustrated by that.
Yeah, just if you look at something like our Stardays, it had something like, I don't know, a few million, maybe more than a few million views. And a lot of those were probably people that have never even heard of Space Marines.
Right.
So now you've taken something that had like kind of mass global appeal and kind of public appeal, and you've put it behind a Games Workshop site that a lot of people, like YouTube's algorithm, will get a lot of people watching that stuff that otherwise would not see it. Whereas now, like, you're not going to get redirected to GW's paywalled site from YouTube. So all those people that would have maybe stumbled upon it and been like, hey, this is really cool, I wonder what this is, and then kind of gone down that rabbit hole, are now no longer going to be doing that. So I think it's a dumb move. And I think GW is maybe being a little bit, like, not to say that they shouldn't do TV shows, they should, but I think they should be partnering with like Amazon Prime or Netflix or another existing platform that's going to have much broader appeal. Like, that would slay on Netflix, I bet, a 40K like CGI.
I would agree. You're not going to find it. You know, if you're just extorting more out of the fans that already buy your models. I'm just like, no, get more people into the hobby. You know, if they don't get into the hobby, get them into the space of what this is. Be awesome, you know.
Yeah, and no offense, after seeing their botch job with the app, I don't have a lot of faith that they're going to build a streaming platform.
Oh, I agree with you there too.
Like they could barely put together like an iPhone app with on time and like bug free and like complete features. So you're telling me they're going to turn around and put together an entire sleep streaming platform? Like it's a joke. But hey, man, I wish them the best of luck. I just hope they don't muck this up.
Yeah. Fingers are crossed. And so content looks great. I'm just not a fan of the paywall and the format. So we'll see what comes out. But yeah, this would make a lot more sense. But yeah, what do I know?
You're not a TV executive.
No, I do have a master's in marketing. But anyway, moving on. Oh, all right. let's get back on track. The ITC top 10 as of this recording. So as I mentioned, we are on the eve of March Madness. For those of you who don't know what that is, as a very large basketball tournament, put in 40-quake terms, all the local clubs play each other over the same weekend. The winner of said clubs then get an automatic bid in this invitational tournament. And then the remaining 64 slots, that's a 64-person tournament, get invited based on how well they do against their peers. So even though you may win in your local area, you might be the 63rd seed because you're just a group of baby seals that live together, whereas other groups are all powerhouses and get in on at-large bids.
Sorry, this is basketball you're talking about?
This is basketball, yes.
Okay. I know that there's a Sweet 16 involved somewhere in this.
It's just a fancy way of saying, yeah, they have clever names.
I just know that there's lots of betting, and I read somewhere that like the March Madness, it like cost the U.S. economy like $2 billion in productivity or something every year.
Absolutely.
Something crazy like that. Yeah, because people just skip work and like don't work. It's right. To watch basketball. Which I never understood. I never understood the obsession with college sports in America. In Canada, like no one gives to like college teams. So I don't know. I never understood why like they make whole movies about like college sports, and I literally never understood it. Like no one goes to any of the games of any sports in Canada, except maybe hockey.
Yeah, you're preaching to choir here because it's very regionalized here in the States. I grew up in New England, so college sports are, you know, not talked about at all. Maybe now college basketball because our local team does well, but compared to like folks I've met from the Midwest that are just like, you know, all gung-ho about football, I'm like, it's college football. You don't get,
yeah, it's just a bunch of 18-year-olds. Like, who cares?
You're the minor leagues of the NFL. How dare you? You know, it's like, okay, whatever, dude. I don't get it. So I actually disrupted a friend's wedding because we got into an argument about Nebraska Cornhuskers. So I was like, whatever. But no, I don't understand the whole point of college sports, at least the fame that they get for it here in the States. But it is very regionalized. And we have it here in Arizona, and it's very strange for me to watch local news and in March to see a 3-part special on ASU football.
I can't wait for all the hate mail from the people in, like, I don't know, the college, like places where there's actually college sports, telling us that we're clueless and don't know.
Probably. I don't get it. I do respect the pageantry of it, and I think the guys who designed Blood Bowl should have gone to a game like an Ohio State Michigan game to get the sense of the rivalry and what's going on. They would have learned a lot, but it just falls on deaf ears for me. Sorry, and just not my thing. So
be ashamed of yourself.
But anyway, the format of March Madness is quite amusing. And by the way, if you are participating in a office pool, you're technically in violation of the RICO Act. So just be careful of that.
Uh-oh. They're going to come for you.
That's right. Anyway, your ITC top 10, speaking of betting. In 10th place, Hello Bar Stefansson, still hanging in the top 10. He's one of the few ties who did show up for the Clutch City GT. But 410 points is the lowest you need to go to get to the top 10 of the ITC at the moment. 9th place, Joshua Reisner, who was there. He came in 60th place at the Clutch City GT. Dylan Kearse coming in at 8th. DJ Jenkins was also there in Texas, comes in at 7th. Aaron Kellman in 6th place. Jamie Pirazzolo, who actually came in 24th at the Clutch City GT, is in 5th. 4th place, Nathan Fennell. I wonder if he's related to Alex. I have to ask that. I might run into him. 3rd place, your leader from last week drops down to 3rd, David Ozawa. 2nd place, Sean Rodriguez. And in 1st place, Ryan Snyder. Wait a minute. Wasn't he teased earlier in the show? Yes, he was. Because guess what? He was at the event.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people forget that you're only allowed 3 RTT scores, I think, out of your 6.
Correct.
So like people couldn't actually even get their 6 scores in until they played 3 GTs basically. So this might have been the 3rd GT that's even in the country this year, or 2nd GT. I'm not quite sure.
You're absolutely right. So
we have not had that many.
We haven't had too many to choose from. So yes, points have been scarce. So yeah, so Ryan Snyder had 3 RTTs. So all the points that he got from Clutch City, he came in 10th place, by the way. Pure profit, just added on top to his score. So, you got 174 points for the Clutch City GT, and his previous RTT outings, first place Finish gave him 156 points, which is probably about the max you're going to get from small RTTs. A second place finish for 123, and then a sixth place finish for 121. So there you go. That's how you get to the top, at least in this day and age. Once more and more GTs come down the road, I'm sure we'll see some more shaking up of the rankings. But that's where we are as of today.
Cool. Congrats. And don't get too comfortable up there, because the season seems like it's just heating up.
Just heating up. I think it's going to be you mentioned it's only the top six scores. So I have a feeling that stretch run between July to November is going to be incredibly heated.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that I'll be able to finally come out of my like exile in Canada and come down to visit you guys and play some events in the States, or at least have some events up here in Canada. But fingers are not crossed.
Yeah, we're hoping for the best that this finally will be over soon. So.
And sounds like I wonder how many people are going to spend their stimulus checks on New Dark Eldar.
Again, teasing me there, Jim.
It's like straight to GW's coffers. You just send the check to GW.
I'm still waiting for all those new models that they're going to show off this week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, my fingers are crossed, both as we do have new updates. We will, of course, post them on our website. Interesting. Hopefully get a little more insight to what is in that Drukhari Codex. I know there were some mixed reviews on Lilith's do stat lines, but part of me says it's hard to judge in a vacuum. Depends on what else comes out. So be curious to see what we get this week.
Yeah, and I'm very weirded out by the cubical nature of the combat patrol. It seems like I don't understand how that few models has such a Gigantor box, but maybe I don't understand physics. Seems like it should have at least three times as many models as it's going to be a box that size. But anyways.
Probably something to do with shipping. I have no idea. Anyways, so that wraps up our show for this week. Again, more updates as you can find on our Facebook page. Jim, where else can we find you? You got your streaming this week?
Yeah, I am. I'm now streaming. I'm doing weekly painting streams, like three or four times a week. I'm doing painting streams. This week, I'm actually going to be doing a... so I'm playing against Team Canada right now in the Greek Hammer TTS Global Tournament. We're playing against the Germans, and I'm actually going to be streaming my game against the Germans, my TTS game. I'm playing my Death Guard versus their Space Marine / Raven Guard. And that is going to be, I'm going to tell you right now, that is going to be on Wednesday at, I believe it is, Wednesday at 12 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. So if you follow me on my Instagram, JimboV_paints, or Duplicity Paint on Twitch and on YouTube, you can find links in my Instagram. Please give me a like, follow. I just made affiliate, which is great, because I've that means like streaming for X amount of time, and I can now have subscriptions and emotes and all sorts of cool stuff. So I'm trying to kind of develop more content there. And I got a lot of cool little tutorials on there. I've already added things like some airbrushing and basing tutorials onto those sites. So if you guys are interested in some like hobby, kind of more hobby oriented content, just hearing me kind of talk about my 1001 hot takes that Ray doesn't let me have on the show, definitely tune in to these streams.
Ray's quiet behind the scenes, but man.
And Eric, sorry. Nah, I don't want to blame Ray.
Ray tells me what to do.
Yeah, he's the real. Break. He's quiet. He's quiet, but he's the real puppet master of this whole operation.
He's our Lord of War.
Yep. Yeah. So I'd love it if you guys want to check it out. And I'll be streaming tomorrow night as well. So I have a schedule up there on when I do streams.
Very cool. Ray, anything else you're plugging this week?
No, I don't have anything to plug.
I have to unplug a toilet when I'm done with this, probably. But that's about it. Now I'll be working the Facebook page during the week. Hopefully I'll have something cool to say about the Drukhari Codex. Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Anyway, I'm cautiously optimistic, and we'll have to talk about it next week. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And I'm Jim.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus Podcast.